Rav Gamliel Omer, Kol Shlomar Shosh Adroin Pesach Lo Yotza Yedei Chovaso, Velohen Pesach Matzo Mora. Right. Rav Gamliel says a halacha that we paskin, that you have to incorporate in your Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim, the significance of the three mitzvahs that we have that evening, the mitzvah of eating Pesach, the mitzvah of eating matzah, and the mitzvah of eating moror. It's not enough just to do those actions, you have to tell the story regarding them. So, which means to say that each part of them tells another aspect of the story of what Yetzias Mitzrayim was all about. Right, and we have to understand what each one is adding. The story of Pesach, the story of Matzah, and the story of Moro. Now, the truth is that the odd man out is really Moro. Right? we're talking about redemption. Right? Cherus. What's the Moro have to do with Cherus? Moro is like, the way it was pre-Cherus. Not only that, we speak about Moro last. Right? First Pesach and Matzah, which both of them have different aspects of the Cherus, which we're going to discuss. Right? And then Moro, which is saved for last, is seemingly reflective of pre-Cherus. You should have spoken about the Moro first. Right? Following the Seder of Matchil Begnus U'Misayim B'Shevach, you have to first talk about the hard times and how things got better. So seemingly when telling the story of what these mitzvahs represent, we should have spoken about the Moro first. And then Pesach and Matzah. Now, of course, Pesach and Matzah are the ones that need the most explaining. What is the difference between the two? Both are commemorate the Cherus. What are the different aspects? So the interesting thing is, the Torah never spoke about Chag HaPesach. Whenever Pesach is mentioned in the Torah, it's referring to the Korban Pesach. The holiday in the Torah is called Chag HaMatzos. Right? We, in our jargon, in the Shulchan Aruch, it's called Hilchos Pesach, and that's very interesting. The way we refer to the Chag, the Torah Shabbal Pez, we latched on to the term Pesach, which is just the Korban. Right? The Torah always called it Chag HaMatzos, which makes good sense because you eat the matzos all 7 days. The Pesach is only on the first night, first afternoon. The afternoon of Erev Pesach, you shecht it, and whatever goes on the Mizbeach goes on the Mizbeach, and then you eat it on the Seder night. The matzos is what's all 7 days, and we call so the Torah rightfully simply called it Chag HaMatzos. But we call it Chag HaPesach, and the question is why? Yeah, yes.
Well, why do you say that the word Pesach only refers to the Korban as opposed to the...
That's a fact. It's the Korban Pesach. The Bible also, Pesach is always Pesach is always the Korban.
Nothing to do with...
Not the holiday.
...over the houses of...
Ever since the Exodus, whenever the Torah talks about the laws of the Chagim, whoever talks uses the term Pesach, it's referring to the Korban. It's not referring to the Chag. The Chag is called Chag HaMatzos.
Is it ever called Chag HaAviv?
No, we know.
Chodesh HaAviv.
No, it's Chodesh HaAviv, Nisan. Right. Nisan is the month of Aviv. Right. So now, here's another thing. We're going to the Moror. So Moror Bizman Hazeh is Midrabanan. It goes together with the Korban Pesach. Moror is a function of the Korban Pesach. So Bizman Hazeh that we don't have the Korban Pesach, we don't have Moror either. Midoraisa. It's Midrabanan that we eat Moror. What remains Doraisa is the mitzvah of matzah. The mitzvah of matzah is minatora, even bizman hazeh. The mitzvah of moror is midrabanan, and it's a function of the korban pesach. And so we don't have the Korban Pesach was manazeh, so Moror also is only a midrabbanan. So it's like very interesting to try to understand what the message in that is. As, you know, we're in Golis now, and there's plenty of bitterness. You know, and Moror is now, it's Moror is a function of the Korban Pesach, which is, you know, when we have a Beis HaMikdash and we're at the height of our freedom, right? That's when we eat Moror. Min HaTorah. As Mama said, it's only Midrabbanan, Zecher. Maybe we should also explain what type of favor the rabbis did by instituting and making us eat Moror. But, you know, the Moror goes with Korban Pesach, which is amazing. You know, it's like combining two opposites. As, you know, we have the Korban when we're in a state of Geula. You know, we have our own Beis HaMikdash. So together with the Korban, the Moror goes with the Korban. Min HaTorah. That's amazing. And the Moror, which symbolizes the hard times, is Dafka, together with the Korban Pesach. That's something which needs to be understood, to say the least. Right. So now there's the mitzvah of Korech. Zecher l'mikdash kehillah. Right. So now everyone agrees that the Korech is purely Zecher l'mikdash. If a person cannot use Korech, let's say a person doesn't have the patience or big enough app to eat matzah and then Moror and then Korech, right? So he'll want to be Yotze with Korech, matzah and Moror together. He's not Yotze, not matzah, not Moror, right? Because the, not Yotze Moror because you have to taste the Moror, right? And the time of the matzah interferes with that, right? But, number two, even not Yotze Matzah either, right? Because since Moror is only Midrabbanan, and Matzah, we explained, is Min HaTorah, so they're not equally an obligation, so it's called that the Moror interferes with the Matzah also, because the Moror is not a real mitzvah, Min HaTorah, like Matzah is, since it's not in the same league. So one is a mitzvah and one is, you know, a non-mitzvah. Relatively speaking, it's only mitzvah midrabban, not midoraisa. So the two cancel each other out. The non-mitzvah in the mouth interferes with the mitzvah. All right. So you need to do matzah. You need to do moror, and only with those two are you yotze. Right. And that's the way it has to be done. But still, after that, you have to do korech. Why is that? Even though you're Yotze Matzah, Yotze Moror, you still have to now do Korech, and it's Zechol Mikdash Kehillah. That's only which just the significance of that needs to be understood.
Well, it's the past and the future. It's a conglomeration. The Moror is the past, that we said is the bitterness, and the Matzah is the Cheres, the future of the, even of Mashiach coming together. So you have to know where you went, you were, in order to go know where you're going. So one is the past and one is sort of the future.
Right. So that's correct, but it's a little bit more than that. Okay. Right? But the so one last question. So we say about matzah zushanu ochlim al shuma, al shor shalai speak, but the dough didn't have time to ferment. We left Egypt in a hurry. When did that happen? The next day, right. Pesach morning. Right, we're now 12 hours before that. Right, and we're eating matzah, and we're commemorating something before it actually happened.
Right.
But here's the amazing thing: in the first Seder in Egypt, they did a Seder. They did a Korban Pesach, the night of Makas Bechoros.
Right,
they had matzah there. It's black and white in the Chumash. Al matzahs rom yochlu. They had matzahs, nothing to do with the matzahs they baked the next day because they were in a hurry.
Right.
It's an amazing thing. Right? There's the matzahs of the Seder night, which they had back in Egypt, which had nothing to do with the matzahs they baked the next day. That was what the halacha of how to eat the Korban Pesach. Then there was another thing. The next day, not at night, the next day, which and we're not holding at the same time period, we're at the night still. Next day, they bake matzahs in a hurry. So it's not true. Matzahs u'shanu ochlim, if we're really supposed to flashback to the perfect parallel point in time of what it was by the Exodus. It's not the matzah that we're eating. The matzah we're eating Seder night was by divine command of what to have with the Korban Pesach.
So which was the divine, which was the most elevated point? The first Seder in Mitzrayim with the Korban Pesach, or the day of Yitzias Mitzrayim when we went out? What do we call it? The epitome?
Yeah.
Which one?
So that's really the point, that the mitzvah of matzah is at night and not by day. Well, you want to eat matzah the next day, because that's when, you know, the matzah zushan ochli mal shuma really happened. You know, you're saying, you missed your mitzvah. The mitzvah is ba'erev tochlu matzahs, the pasuk says. You eat matzahs at night. That's where you get your mitzvah saseh of eating matzah. That which we say, that matzah b'zman hazeh is doraisa, and it's a chiyuv, that's at Seder night. During the, from the first day morning onwards, matzah is roshus, not chova. You don't have to eat matzah. You know, if you want to eat bread, you have to eat matzah. Right, but you don't have to. It's a chiyuv only at night. It's an amazing thing. So it's al shum that, you know, that the next day, because the next day, you know, when it's not a mitzvah to eat matzah, they bake their matzahs in a hurry.
But I'm talking about what, emotionally, for Klal Yisrael going out, what was the highlight? Was it, I mean, a mitzvah was a mitzvah. So we ate the matzahs, we ate the Korban Pesach. But wasn't the Yitzias Mitzrayim actually packing our bags and running out of there the highlight or the most?
I'm saying, no, so this really gets into the next point that we're trying to lead up to. That it, this, you know, that the Seder night breaks rank, you know, with most of the mitzvahs, you know, most, just about all, with the exception of Sukkot, interestingly enough. Right, the but might be related, you might be able to figure out the relationship. Right, most of the Chagim, the main mitzvah of the Chag is by day. Like, take, for example, right, Rosh Hashanah, Shofar. Mitzvah is by day, not by night. Right, the special korbanos, generally for most chagim, which is a korban musaf, that's all by day. Right, but over here by Pesach it's at night. By the way, also the halacha lemaaseh, if a person could only hear the Megillah once, you know, and you're gonna have to choose between the nighttime Megillah and the morning Megillah, which one should be preferred? The morning Megillah. You know, you're supposed to hear it twice. You know, if you can only do one, you're supposed to prefer. Because the day is always the ikkar. Oh, same thing by Sukkot, even though eating in the Sukkot, the main mitzvah is on the first night. However, Lulav is by day. Now, why? You might be able to figure out from what we're going to say about Pesach why eating in Sukkot the first night is, you know, the obligation. You know, the rest of the days, if you want to eat, you have to eat in a sukkah. But if you don't want to eat and you don't want to sleep, you don't have to be in a sukkah. If you don't want to eat, you don't want to sleep. Right? But lulav is only by day. You know, because day is the time of a person's activity. Yetzer don lepolo, l'avodaso ade arev, the pasuk says. A person goes out to his job and is doing until nightfall. You know, night was, is not, people weren't meant to work at night. Either to learn or to sleep. Those are the two shittas in the Gemara. Malaya was created either for the Girsa or the Shinta. It was either created for sleeping or for learning. Nothing else. Yes. Not the movies, not any of those. It's right? So what night was created for. It's not a time of work. Right? So you understand, you know, the main mitzvahs asay, you know, generally apply during the day. You know, it's a time of work. And so that, and, you know, there are those mefarshim that indeed build this into the manishtana. Manishtana halayla hazeh. The pasuk should have, I mean, rather, the statement should have read to be grammatically correct. Manishtana halayla hazu, because it's feminine. It's, you know, layla, leilot. Right, so, because, so the mefarshim explain, you know, we read that, you know, but daytime is zohar, yom, yamim. Right? This night is different, that we're treating it like day. We're doing all the mitzvahs, man. You know, it's a night packed with mitzvahs. Generally, you know, when a chag hits, you know, the main mitzvahs are by day, because that's the time of activity. The idea behind all this is that we have to realize that the Yetzias Mitzrayim is the world starting all over again. Yeah. It's not for nothing that it's called Leil HaSeder. Why is it called Leil HaSeder? Right. The night of the order. Right, okay, you got, you know, there's a, you know, you open up your Seder, you'll see Seder Eruv Tavshilin. Seder, you know, any mitzvah that, you know, has its, you know, there's the way to do it, and there's what, and the formula to say, it's called a Seder. Right? So why is this night different? That's called Leil HaSeder, more than any other, whenever you have to do any type of mitzvah that involves a Maisa, and to say a popular formula, that's also called Seder. Yeah, you know, this is like the night of the order. Right? So, Chazal divide up world history into three eras. Right, the Gemara Sanhedrin says that Shita Alfish Din Havei Alma, the world's going to last for 6,000 years, and it divides into three eras. Alpayim Tohu, 2,000 years of void, Alpayim Torah, 2,000 years of Torah, and Alpayim Mashiach. Right, the last 2,000 years was meant to be the empire of Mashiach, but, you know, because of our sins, you know, we've depleted, you know, we have lessened, you know, the time that he could have reigned. He could have reigned for, could have had a 2,000-year empire. Right. The first 2,000 years of world history, Chazal call that Tohu. Right. Tohu is the opposite of Seder. Chaos. Right. Now, what was so chaotic? You know, there was economies, there was civilization, there was technology, you know. And, life then was the same as life now from a secular perspective. Right? The chaos and the, you know, the lack of order is that, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was totally outside of the world. So now even though there's a certain shift that takes place at the year 2000, at the year 2000 exactly, because what happened then? Avraham Avinu begins his ministry. Avinu was born in the year 1948. So by the year 2000, he had started his ministry. He had started preaching, started his campaigning for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that marked a shift. But that shift was on the individual level, not on the global level. Right? Not at the world at large. Right? Avraham Avinu, you say he had the Nefesh Asher Asu B'choron. Right? What happened to them all? They didn't last more than one generation. By the days of Yitzhak Avinu, it was all gone. And Avraham Avinu knew that. He knew it would happen. And that's why he so much wanted a son. Because he wanted some guarantee that his legacy would be carried on. Right, and the only one who really carried in the next generation, the only one carried the torch, was Yitzhak Avinu. He wanted a son that he could rely on, that would carry the torch. And the others were still always functioning as individuals. So, if you read the strict, reading of the Psukim, the Rambam points this out in the Mor Nevuchim. If you read the strict reading of the Psukim without any Midrashim, that, some Midrashim have to sometimes be understood allegorically, the strict reading of the Psukim indicates there were no revealed miracles in the days of the Avos. And not only that, until Moshe Rabbeinu, there was never a Navi sent to speak to anybody b'shem Hashem. The first was Moshe Rabbeinu. He was sent to Paro and to the Jewish people, respectively. Look in the Psukim. It was the first time that happened in history. People had their own private revelations, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Adam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Noach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Shem ve'Aver. They were never commanded to go out and preach and say something in the name of God to someone else. All right? Well, so, and the Rambam further says, it, you know, it's, with this you could understand why Chazal refer to Beit Midrasho Shoshem Ve'ever. They had a Beis Medrash. You went there. They didn't tell you messages from God. You sat and you learned with them. You know, listen, I'll talk philosophy with you. You buy it, you buy it. You don't buy it, you don't buy it. Right? There was no revelation. So even the people that had revelations, that was their private business. So they'd debate with someone, you know, and try to convince him. Right? But it's your word against his. It's your argument against his argument. Right? The world itself remained, you know, without any revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And that's called chaos. Because the real Seder HaBriya, the real Seder of reality is Kol Ma Shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lo Bra'o El Lichvodo. As the Mishnah says. Right? And whatever God created, it all exists for the glory of God. And that's really the unifying pattern in reality. How does this glorify HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How does this glorify HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How does this serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How does this contribute to Shem Shamayim? That's the real Seder of reality. Right? Well, you know, what the sciences measure, you know, all these physical laws, that's not the real pattern for reality. That's just they're just measuring how the forces stack up on top of each other. You know, there are higher forces, lower forces, right? But, you know, real Seder is how there is a unifying purpose that all the forces join together to serve one common goal. Science doesn't see that. Unifying goal. Mm-hmm. You know, you see, you know, how there are different forces. This one does this one, does that one, and they're stacked one on top of each other. But in Seder, it's not being stacked. It's not a stacked one on top of the other. It's working together.
Well, aren't scientists looking for the theory of everything?
They are.
Basically.
But it's in religion. It's not in science. It's not in science. Right. And that's the real, you know, that's the Seder, and that's also would explain how the, you know, things could also progress and, you know, for lack of a better word, evolve, metamorphosize to a higher reality. But that's how things interlock in a order, a real order of supplementation, that they supplement for each other. Right? But that's only in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the network. That's the network that holds things together in a manner that things will supplement for each other and progress and metamorphosize, you know, to a higher reality. Right. How the world improved after the flood. You know, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a bris with the world. He's never going to do, you know, he's not going to do this again. Right? A person could make a mistake to think that, you know, the world hit a certain level of stability. Yeah, that's adequate. It will never regress back to a flood. Right? That's what you might think. And that's what, you know, that's basically what the Goyim thinks subconsciously. The world has hit a certain stable balance and things are okay. The way they are. They're okay. Right? But Chazal tells an interesting thing, you know, in the Sugya of Purim, the Chag that directly precedes Pesach on a calendar. You know, the famous, you know, Gemara, talking about looking for a remez, you know, for the characters of Purim in the Chumash. Mm-hmm. Right? You know how that, it opens up, it started off with Moshe min HaTorah minayim. You know, I want to see a remez to Moshe before he was born. You know, the Pasuk brings, Lo yadun ruchi ba'adam le'olam b'shagam u'basar v'yam av'meh v'esrim shana. I am not going to contend with man forever, for he is flesh. He's got 120 years. That pasuk was said when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Geyser the Mabul. Right? So b'shagam, for he is flesh, b'shagam is gematria Moshe. And that's why pasuk said, you lads 120 years, also alluding to Moshe Rabbeinu, who lived 120 years. Right, he was 120 years to the Mabul. Right, there's an allusion to Moshe Rabbeinu by the Gzera of the Mabul. What's that mean? Right? So the way the world is Rosh Hashanah is pushing the reset button. That's what the Mabul is, reset. Because the world was being pushed back to the way it was on the very first day of creation, before God split the waters, on the second day. He put the whole world underwater again. Right? Reset. But for what sake? For what purpose? For Moshe Rabbeinu. Not for the world that we know today, the world that's been ever since the Mabul. That's just a stepping stone. The real purpose of pushing the reset was for Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? So people think that, as it were, the level that humanity struck, that the Bnei Noach struck, which sadly is being eroded in our days, whatever level of morality the Bnei Noach had that made them worthy of survival, that's adequate. It's not. We say that's also chaos. So that's an amazing thing, that Mitzrayim, which was really represents the last holdout of the Dor HaMabul. That's why their power was in water. Nilus, that's it, drowning the Jewish babies in water. Right?
Right? You're saying it's the last, Mitzrayim is the last, vestige of pre-Mabul.
Yes.
Put underwater.
Yes. Yes. Power of water. Right? And Moshe Rabbeinu started his life in a teva, mm-hmm. like Noah. It says all this in the Zohar. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu is the real ushering in of what the teva was all about back then. It wasn't about the world of the Bnei Noach. The teva back then was for the sake of the teva of Moshe Rabbeinu. Mm. Right? And that's what it's called. He's called Moshe Kimina Moshe. I've raised him above water. Water is chaos. Underwater, there's no order. Water causes things to dissolve. Water is
also icon?
Yes. Water is chaos.
But isn't also water considered life? Chaim, chaim?
When it's harnessed. When it's harnessed. Yeah, and that's when you control it. So,
where does it say water is
Tava? In the Svarim, it says from the Yesod HaMayim comes from the four of the four elements, four basic elements. So from the Yesod HaMayim comes Tava. That is correct. Yeah, which was what the Dor HaMabul was. They were just so free with their Tava. That's why Mida Keneged Mida, they were flooded with water. That's correct. That was the Mida Keneged Mida. Out of control, no structure. Moshe Rabbeinu is elevated above the water. Ki min ha-mayim mishisihu, and that's getting past the chaos of the Dor HaMabul. That the stability that the world attained after the Mabul was not because that world is okay. That's not the pshat. Is that world is a stepping stone for Am Yisrael to appear, for Moshe Rabbeinu to come, and for Am Yisrael to appear. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't bring the Mabul again. Not because the way it is with the Bnei Noach is okay, is adequate. It's not adequate. But it's a world that is going to eventually lead into Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why.
It's an adequate stability for the next thing.
It's a means. It's not an end. It's not really a plateau. It's mm-hmm. Yeah.
The way Rabbi Nosson Weiss describes it is that it's supposed to be that Hashem runs the world based on our behavior. But the way he describes what happened with Noah is that he put it on autopilot because they are going to continue to be so bad that it can't be, at a certain... That's what you're saying, they think it's okay. It's really not okay. It's just like saying, like if the kids are bad, we won't go on vacation. So, okay, we're going anyway. It doesn't matter. It's just a type of autopilot. The world will run at a certain level, no matter how badly they behave, because he sees that they're not going to really get so much better. But with the Yidden, says the problem is when Jews try to run their lives like on the autopilot plane. We're supposed to be on the plane that matters how we act, that God is flying.
Right.
And for the Goyim, it's going to have to be on autopilot because they're not going to get that much better anyway.
Yes, all true.
How many years after the Mahal was Doron Flocka?
No, roughly 1,000. Roughly. 10 generations, roughly. You know, a little bit less, a little bit less, but, Anyways, so with Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's called the Night of the Order, a new order, meaning order is now going to reign in the world. Right. And this is what's eternal about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Eternal and unceasing. Right. Ever since Yetzias Mitzrayim, the world has changed irreversibly. There is not a human being on earth that hasn't heard about God. As opposed to when Moshe Rabbeinu first went to Paro, said, I got a message for him. But Paro's immediate response, Lo yadatis, I've never heard of the guy. Whether they believe in God, they believe in God. God is part of the air we breathe. There's not a human being on earth that hasn't heard about Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, the truth is, there isn't a human being on earth that hasn't heard of the Torah either. They believe in the Torah, don't believe in the Torah. Right? The concept permeates the world. Right? As opposed to pre-Yetzias Mitzrayim, these concepts were totally alien. They're not part of the global consciousness. That's what Kodesh Baruch Hu says. So Kodesh Baruch Hu told Paro, listen, I could have done away with you a long time ago, but I've sustained you to show off my might and that my name should be spoken throughout the world. And this way, the chayrus of Yetzias Mitzrayim is eternal. You might ask, it's been reversed many times over. We were engulfed by this guy, we're engulfed by this guy, we're engulfed now. Now, the chayrus of Yetzias Mitzrayim that's eternal and irreversible was that the world was redeemed from the godless chaos. And a direct result of that, right, is that the Torah came down. Yetzias Mitzrayim paved way for Matan Torah. And as bad as things are, the Torah never was repossessed, was never recalled back to heaven. But Yetzias Mitzrayim, as we're prepared, prepared the world to receive Torah, and the fact that Matan Torah is eternal is a function of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim made the world ready for Torah.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yeah.
It may sound a little heretical. We got the Torah, so we knew how to behave and what to do and what was necessary and what was real. The Goyim, even though they rejected it, supposedly they were asked, but they reject. How can they be held to a standard of behavior that doesn't fall back into chaos without really the blueprint of the Torah in their lives?
I'm not sure I understand. It was after Yetzias Mitzrayim, it was after Kriyas Yamsuf, and it was offered to their ministering angels, not interested. Not interested in submitting to the new world order. And that really is the difference between Jew and Goy. That's what we're going to get into. That's what the matzah represents. We'll get to that in a second.
In all seriousness, I don't believe in stop signs. I'm still going to get a ticket. It doesn't matter whether you believe it. When that was overdone and they rejected it, That doesn't mean that they're part of an athlete with respect to their heads and shoulders. But you know what I'm saying? So just because they exist, like it's like if a kid goes off to death, is he not responsible for misses anymore? Do you know what I'm saying? Just because you say you don't want to behave the way the law of the world says you have to behave, you're still going to have to answer for it. No?
It's a positive force for us. It's a
positive force for them too. They're choosing not to abide by that doesn't mean they're not responsible. They still believe that. I mean, you ask any guy, they believe in the Ten Commandments. Ask them, what does that mean about Shabbos?
Do they have Shabbos on Sunday?
Whatever it is, they don't have any Shabbos, so that's not the point, you know? They're still obligated.
Okay, so now, Leil HaSeder. It's called the Night of the Order. Reality is now being refashioned. You know, because the order that it was always meant to live by, the script that it was meant to follow, is coming into effect. So it's like the world's being recreated. So now this is the idea behind Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to tell the story. You know, right? And the story seemingly is never ends. Right, behold, Darvado, Chayavadom, Liros, Esatro, Kiliyatz Mitzrayim. Every generation, you have to view yourself as if you left Egypt. What is that? Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is the story of destiny itself. You know, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is the story of life itself. The script that the universe is meant to follow. Right? And that every generation is a part of that script. Every generation playing its role in the story. Because the order, you know, takes effect, but it's not fully actual. You know, this order has to take over the world, and it's to take over all generations. It has to be imposed. You know, this order has to be imposed and implemented, and that's the story of
What is that order? How would you define
that order? That order is called Torah. It's the second era called Beis Alafim Torah. Right, that Seder of the, you know, imposing the order of the Torah on the world. Right, the next milestone is Mashiach. You know, then the Beis Alafim Mashiach, where he's supposed to help us get to an even higher level. Yeah, but Mashiach is when that order called the Torah has been, extended to encompass the whole world. You know, so even if the order has entered reality, it is yet to play out. It's like the story started, but the story hasn't finished yet. And every generation is another chapter. But it's another chapter in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim is getting out of the chaos and getting into the order. And every generation's a part of it.
Even though we're beyond 4,000 years.
That's because we screwed up. You know, we could have finished, you know. If we had been on schedule, we could have finished, you know, and then be on another milestone in the journey of, you know, taking things after the order of Torah conquered the world, you know, working with that to attain an even higher level, you know, after law and order has been... We're still in, you know, implementing law and order, the law and order of the Torah. And every generation is another chapter in that story. Yetzias Mitzrayim is, not only is it irreversible, it never stopped happening. It's still happening. Because there's still the battle between order and chaos going on in every generation. Every generation is furthering the exodus from chaos into order to another level, to another time.
Or putting it back.
Well, yeah, sadly, yeah. Right.
But that's what
at least, you know, our concept, you can never go back to, you know.
Total chaos.
You can't go back right to, you can't close the book. Right. You can't close the book. You know, how fast you're moving to the next chapter is, you know, what's, you know. But you can never close the book anymore. After the Exodus. And that's what Sipri Yitzchak is, the story of life itself. But that's what, you know, but you think about it on a deeper level, that's what a story is. A story is that there's a certain theme that binds together all the events. You know, well, what's a story? You know, there's always event, disjointed. The story creates a certain unifying theme of how this event led to that, which leads to that, and pulls it all together. The Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim is the story of life itself. You know, it's the order. You know, the way a story makes order between all the characters and all the different incidents and pulls it together in one unified plot. There is a unified plot in Destiny. That's a Gilui Kvod Shemayim.
That's so interesting because the Mach is really a complete chaos. If they think that nature is what rules the world, Hashem was showing them this is chaos. When it can make all the things that, you know, fire and ice and everything do
right.
So everything that's so unexpected.
Yes. All right. So the order, you know, which is, you know, it's now the it's the job of all generations to keep this order going.
So really we have very little time left for our state of perfection.
Yeah.
So we're going to just get a little smatter and then we're going to...
Oh, yeah. I mean, not a little smatter. It's going to be very painful if we're not going to do the job ourselves. And that's... We're going to get into Moror very shortly, what Moror has to do with all this. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So now. So Seder night is when, you know, the cosmic order, which is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is the story of destiny itself, which extends throughout all generations. Right? The story has started, and there's no way to close the book ever again. The question is how quickly we're going to flip through the chapters. Every generation is another chapter of the story. That's why Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim, and you have to view, every part has to view as if he left Mitzrayim. Everyone's extending the order that Yetzias Mitzrayim brought to the world to his generation. Right? Adding another chapter to that story. All right? But things start, you know, by divine initiative. We can't start. You know, we're not. We can't create Yesh Me'ayin. All right. The Bria started in darkness. That's all. Tov Avoh V'Choshech. Right. And every new day, just like the Bria started with darkness, every new day starts at night. So you think of there's two aspects to darkness. Right? The darkness on the one end is a form of chaos. You know, because you can't see order, and that's why it's no coincidence. Crime is at night. Crime is at night, and the sin is rampant at night. It's not a coincidence. It's all, you know, it's a time for chaos. You know, that's why you should go to sleep and stay out of trouble. Right? Mm-hmm. No, really, no joke. Just go to sleep and stay out of trouble. But there's another type of darkness, right? And that is when sun, you know, you can have a very bright light. Like if let's say I would blast out this room with X-rays, right? Since you can't see X-rays, right? The room will look black. It's not the frequency of light that you can see. Right? So the room could be full of light, but you know, you don't see it because you don't have the eyes to see it. Right? There's the darkness of mystery, things that are above seichel. Right. The Bria starting in darkness. Right. So on one hand, you know, it starts with chaos and then order is restored. But there's also another. There's another aspect to it. It starts directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, who is above where any mind reaches. And then he makes order that the human being could appreciate. And it's going from darkness to light. You know, dark side in a way that he's reducing it to the point that to the level of human appreciation. Right? But it all starts from him. Right? But here's the amazing thing, the very first word of the Torah, when the world is in that darkness, before Yehi'or, Bereishis. Right, Bishul Yisrael Shnikru Reishis, Bishul Ator Shnikreis Reishis. Right, and the very first word of the Torah, Am Yisrael, and the Torah that they live by is alluded to. Right, that shows that you know, we have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's even above, you know, where our appreciation and where our avoda could ever reach. Right? And that makes good sense because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us, you know, as we learned the Darshan, he wants to be meitiv, he wants to do good to us. He wants to give us as much as we can take. He wants to give us even more than we could deserve, even more than what we deserve, even more than what we could appreciate. And it also means that, you know, his having chosen us is a very important point to give us chizuk and to be real with the fact that Yetzias Mitzrayim is eternal and it hasn't been, you know, maybe it just was then, but it's over now. We're back in Golus. Right? He chose us with his pure omnipotence that's above where any mitzvah or any mind could ever reach. Which means that the bond between us and him is irrescindible, no matter how badly we sin. And that's our answer to the Christians. He didn't exchange us for another nation. Because our relationship with him is based on his pure omnipotence that's above where any mind or action could reach. So if we sin and sin and sin, not that we're, you know, don't want to do a thing like that, but we sin and sin and sin, there is no breaking that bond. Because that bond is not based on our input. It's beyond where our input and our minds could ever reach. Bereishis, you know, it's the first thing as it were on God's mind. It's not, you know, he already conceived of Am Yisrael. We didn't earn it. Nothing existed yet. Based on pure divine omnipotence. And that's what the Korban Pesach represents. It's a jump. It's not a continuum. It's not like, you know, it's like, you know, you get to God's good graces if you go a million miles on the good path. Not true. It's even past that. There's like no way to get there from here. It's a jump. It's a skip. It's a, right? There's no mathematically impossible. Like Kasich getting the requisite amount of delegates. It's mathematically impossible. Right.
So there's a jump to our relationship that's unbroken?
There's a jump that just breaks through, you know, breaks through all types of base, reason, mathematics, just is. That's what the Korban Pesach, it's a jump. He chose us because he chose us. Because when he first conceived of the world, first thing he thought of was us. We're rooted in his very, you know, his very pure divine initiative to create the world. That's where we're rooted. And that's what the Korban Pesach represents. It's a jump, but that's why the mitzvah of Korban Pesach is at night. It's above where we reach. It's above where we understand. So most mitzvahs are by day, because that's the day, that's the time of activity. Right? It's time of, you know, what we understand and we see and we have a grip on things. But Pesach is above, you know, our what we understand and what we have a grip on. Right? But here's the amazing thing, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, he didn't do something, for lack of a better chasrom, silly, right? When he chose us above, you know, any reason, he still, he made a wise choice nonetheless. He took a good people that still do as much as they can, right? And, you know, don't take their time. You know, taking your time, it represents doing things on your own terms. You know, doing things in a rush represents that, you're out of your comfort zone. That's what running represents. Out of your comfort zone, doing things quickly, bezrizus, right? As opposed to taking your time, it's a comfort zone, right? And that's what the matzah represents. Now the matzah was indeed done the next day. Right, because day is the time of our activity. The matzah that we're commemorating Seder night, even though the matzah ate in Egypt had nothing to do with the matzah ate the next day, but we say on Seder night, we talk about the matzah of the next day. Because the pshat is like this. The next day, when it's our turn, now it's our turn, you know, nighttime is, you know, is the time of mystery. Daytime is the time of clarity. Our turn to do our part. When it came time for us to do our part, we did things in a hurry. Didn't take our time. Until we saw the revelation, we ran.
So we had the revelation before?
No. When the revelation came within our grasp, the revelation of the day. There's a revelation of the day, which is the revelation you have a grasp on. Right, we ran. We didn't walk. We ran. You know,
so our reaction to God's mystery in choosing us and that is we run. We run with it.
We run with it, but of course that's what we do, and that's by day. But here's the amazing thing: at nighttime, when we were chosen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose the type of people that when they can do, they do. They give it their all. They don't do it within their comfort zone. They run with it. The Radziner says, right, the Sod Yesharim, that the running with the out of Mitzrayim was the shorish of saying Naaseh before Nishma. That's where the original shorish of saying Naaseh before Nishma. You don't have to tell us what's written. We trust you. It's rooted in the matzah. Ki gorshu min Mitzrayim. They didn't wait. They didn't tarry. They didn't ask any questions. They moved. Right. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us, right, above any reason, he chose the type of people, right, that are willing to run after him. Right? So he chose wisely. So even though he didn't make it based on what we do, but he chose it on that condition. And that's really the exchange, you know, between us and the Ben Rosha. He says, Ma avodah zasachem. What's his question? No reason to do mitzvahs. We have an unbreakable bond with God. Mitzvahs don't make a difference. So we say, Ilu hayasham loya nigal. If you would have been there, you wouldn't have been saved. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, even though he chose us above whatever, you know, our whatever we could ever achieve, but he still took us out on condition that we be interested in serving him. You're not interested at all. Ilu hayasham loya nigal. And if you would have been there, you would have not been redeemed. Right. So even at the time of Pesach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has matzah in mind. But as it were, he's extending us matzah on credit. Right? You know, it's next day. Because, yeah, I'm choosing you, you know, above whatever you could ever earn. Right? Right? But when the time comes, you're going to have to pay off. But that means that part of the chayrus is that we're going to serve him, and that's what the matzah represents. We're going to do whatever we can. And that's inextricably bound up with being chosen, because he chose the type of people that, even though he has a bond with them above mitzvahs, still he chose the type of people that want to do mitzvahs and want to, do as much as they can. Now, as much as I can means even, breaking the comfort zone. Right? And then comes moral. Right? Right, and moral is a very complex thing, right? Because it represents many different things that are all part of this package, right? But rooted in the Korban Pesach, we said that moral goes together with the Korban Pesach. Amazing irony if it represents the hard times. It only goes together when you have the good times, when you have a Beis Hamikdash, you have the Korban Pesach, right? Mora represents two things, right? Two aspects to it. One is something bitter. Right, something is bitter, when you simply don't appreciate it. I know, dry red wine is also not sweet, but you can learn to appreciate it. And that's pleasure. Right? Bitterness is not so much that particular taste bud in so much as your inability to appreciate. People, go to the gym and exercise, and some people really enjoy it. But if you do even half that amount of physical exertion in housework or in kitchen work, you're miserable. Right? Might be only half as strenuous. You're miserable. You don't appreciate it. You're not happy with it. Bitterness is the ability to, or rather, the inability to appreciate something. It's an amazing thing. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he wants to give us good. And the good is something beyond our ability to appreciate. It will taste bitter. The Gemara says in Brachas, Gil Matanas Tavis HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, V'lo Nastam Elai Dei Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us three good gifts, and he gave it through pain. Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. And all this has to do with Yitzias Mitzrayim. Yitzias Mitzrayim triggered the Albeis Alafim Torah that made it now global. The others had it on their, in their own private lives. But, Yitzias Mitzrayim made the Beis Alafim Torah go global. Right? And, of course, we took it out of Mitzrayim so as to go to Eretz Yisrael. Right? And the whole process of Torah and Mitzvahs and Eretz Yisrael is to make it to Olam Haba. Right? These are the three destinations that we reach once we get the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim rolling. Step one is the Torah, step two is Eretz Yisrael, and ultimately, final stop, Olam Haba. Right? These are the three Matanos Tavos they were given Ayidei Yisurim. Right? Which are the three destinations of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim is embarking on the journey. So the Ramchal explains that there is so much good, right, in these things that, we can't even appreciate how good they are. And that's why, it feels like Yisurin in the process of getting there. Because these things are, even above our ability to appreciate. Right? Now, what makes this, now, finding it bitter at least shows that we have a head on our shoulders and we're trying to wrap our heads around it. Right, we're just not matzliach. That's why it tastes bitter. Right, a person who's oblivious, is not you know, oblivious is oblivious, right? You know, our, like we learned in Derech Hashem, our trying to earn it and our trying to be worthy, you know, makes us true masters over that good. That's what makes it sweet. Otherwise, it's bitter. Right? You know, so you could have tremendous goodness, and if you don't have the ability to appreciate it, you can even find it, you know, even embarrassing. You know, it feels like charity. Like we learned, like everything we learned at Derech Hashem, and all our trying to strive is for the ability to appreciate, you know, to be worthy of it, to be congruent with it, and it's sweet. But when there's this incongruence, that's why it's bitter.
So it's our receptors, really, that are defective.
Yeah, but at least you care about appreciating. All right, and we're going to get into it. This has two aspects to it, right? We hope and pray. Someone raised the question. You know, well, we screwed up. We didn't make it. We didn't make Mashiach. You know, by the year 4000. Right. So, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have to finish up the job for us if we don't really get it all together. And indeed, it will feel bitter, right? But it'll feel bitter because we're getting something that's, you know, so good, that's beyond our ability to appreciate. And that's why it's going to taste bitter, right? So the bitterness in itself is indicative, you know, sometimes of something good. You know, mashal ma davar daima, right? Well, you have to take medicine, and the medicine's bitter. It's good for you. You just don't appreciate it. It's good for you, right? And in that sense, you know, the bitterness factor increases to the extent that you are less and less worthy and less appreciative. But on the other hand, it means you're getting it anyway. Right? You're getting it anyway. Now you just don't, you sadly have not built up the kalim to appreciate it. You more relied on divine omnipotence to give it to you as opposed to you're trying to earn it. The more you are worthy, the more it's sweet. Right? And that's why, you know, so the more goes together with the Korban Pesach. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to jump, he's going to give you these Matanos Tovos, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, Olam Haba. You're going to get it whether you deserve it or not. Right? Just, you should know, it's going to be bitter if you're not worthy. Right, but ultimately, you know, you understand that once we get it, eventually you're going to catch up. You know, yeah. When you get it, eventually you're going to adjust and catch up to be in step with what's around you. Eventually, it'll turn sweet. The process is bitter because you're not there yet. But when we catch up, it will be sweet. So as a function of the Korban Pesach that we're going to get sometimes, you catch up, meaning, well, it will be bitter at the first instance.
When you catch up.
Meaning as in, you know, as you internalize that goodness and your psyche becomes congruent to it, then it will sweeten. You need to catch up to the reality that's been thrust upon you. It's not like, you know, adjust. Like any new situation, where it's a shock initially, that's the bitter. You had a jump, a Pesach. You jumped into something before you're ready for it. That feeling is bitter, even though it's good for you, and then you catch up eventually. Olam Haba is not going to be bitter. Olam Haba is going to be sweet. But when you get it, you know, before you're ready for it, in the first instance, it's bitter. So, yeah. Get into step. Right? So the moral goes together with the Pesach, that we're going to get things, goodness that we don't even earn. Right? But those things will taste bitter. Right? But we're going to get it anyway. Right? Right? And to that extent, you know, the matzah and moror are the real opposites. The matzah is doing as much as we can. And the morrow represents how you get something. Right? That you're not ready for. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu jumps. He'll skip steps. Because if he's going to wait for us to get our act together, it may never happen. That's why the morrow goes together with the Pesach. Right?
But a misalignment. God is doing, we're not there, we can't absorb it, we can't accept it, and we have to catch up to what God gave us.
Yes. Yes. Catch up. And that experience of getting something that you can't appreciate yet, you know, that's called, you know, when things are above your ability, that's what's called bitter. When it's above your appreciation level.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Right?
Maybe we're because we're not really worthy.
Right.
No, that we know in our heads that we're not worthy.
Yeah. But then there's another aspect of bitterness, and with this we'll end. We'll try to go full circle. It's another type of bitterness, right? Finding something bitter because you know it's unacceptable. Right. Right. And that's also part of the geula, right? Part of the geula is to understand that the situation that we were in beforehand is unacceptable, and you'd never want to go back there. Chazal tells us that even a slave can never escape from Egypt. So the Radziner explains, because you know the Egyptians had a great way of convincing people, you're better off as a slave here than as a rich man anywhere else.
Yeah.
This is where it's at.
Right.
This is normal. The worst part of the golos is to think that it's normal. That's the biggest shibud, right? And you should know that it's geula to know that that way of life is bitter. There's another aspect to it. Right? There's two aspects. There's a double-edged sword to the idea of bitterness. It's above your appreciation level, but also the very fact to view golos as bitter, as an unacceptable. Right? Because the worst golos is to, yeah, think that that's normal. As if life without a base measure is normal. Right? There's a terrible thing that, you know, that moror, you know, Chazal, why did Chazal give us a mitzvah to Rabbanon of moror? Right? And it's after the matzah. And it's after the matzah. It should be before the matzah. Right? All right. God forbid, with the silu kashchina of Chorban Abayis, and we don't have the Korban Pesach, you know, the silu kadas is so bad that we don't even realize how bad we have it. As if this is normal. As I like, you know, I think about the gula, it's like icing on the cake. What do you mean? Life as it is not acceptable. Right? Right? And that really is, you know, the way people could think, you know, and maybe do think. And it's a tremendous chesed that the Rabbanan instituted moror. Right? To remind us that, you know, the state of golus is unacceptable. But sometimes you could only see that in hindsight. Because till you got out of it, it seemed normal. Once you're out of it, you could see how it's abnormal. And you can't believe you ever lived that way, you ever found pleasure that way. And that's why we eat the maror after the matzah. First geula, first get out of it. Get out of the box, and then from where you are now, you could see how that way was no way to live. But sometimes you have to be out of it first to see it. So maror itself, right? To even find the golus bitter is a certain level of geula.
This reminds me of abuse cases.
Yeah, you got to be out of it in order. Yeah, it's true. You have to have maror after matzah. And that's a certain level of geula. Having at least finding the golus painful is a certain level of cherus. He realized that that way is no way to live.
I love that.
All right. Korech means matzah and maror together, zechel and mikdash, because we have to do our best, you know, to receive what God wants to give us above our appreciation level, but still do as much as we can. And that's what Korech symbolizes. We're going to get stuff that we can't even earn, can't even appreciate, but we, on our hand, on our side are still going to do as much as we can. That's what the Korach represents.
But you got to throw a little sweetness in there.
That's right. That's correct. That is correct, because you do want to eventually eternalize it. You want to catch up. And that's it. It'll just go full circle. You know, this already Kedushas Levi says, Jews give God credit and God gives the Jewish people credit. We called Chag HaPesach, right, because we're putting the emphasis on how HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us beyond whatever we could ever earn. We're not taking credit for Yetzias Mitzrayim. It was a jump. It was a skip. It was out of the darkness, you know, beyond where we could ever reach. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu always looks at the matzah. Right? He looks at what the Jewish people did. That at least they always do what they can to justify what God gives us out of his pure omnipotence. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, gives us the credit for even what he does. So he calls it Chag HaMatzos, even though that wasn't even on that night, it was the next day. Right? He gives us credit for whatever we can do. And even, you know, even what he conceived of before we even existed, he gives us credit for that also. He looks at the matzah, but we always have to look to him, right, and look at how he gives us above wherever we could ever deserve. So we call it Chag HaPesach, and he calls it Chag HaMatzos. All right, stop here. Chag Kosher V'Sameach.